Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 10, Episode 12, titled Walk With Us. Aaron, what did you think of this episode of The Walking Dead?
You know what? I think this is an excellent episode of The Walking Dead. It really hit on some emotional cylinders for me. I'm just so impressed that they've completely rehabilitated Daryl's character. Rick leaving the show is the best thing that ever happened to Norman Reedus.
Yeah, he gets the spotlight all to himself now.
Well, I mean, it's not even a spotlight. It's just like Andrew Lincoln, and I don't think it's any fault of his own, but like the narrative, like Daryl was never supposed to be in The Walking Dead. So like all of the narrative, like he's always going to be a second banana because there isn't anything in the source material for him that you can kind of mine. And I feel like him and Rick always kind of like were a split soul in this show, and getting rid of Rick has let him kind of, you know, show a lot of his natural qualities. And some of that stuff with like Kim and Judith, the stuff with the, you know, Judith and Earl, the blacksmith. Mm-hmm. It really hit with me, man. I wish Walking Dead was always this good. And like, I have literally no fucking clue what's going to happen next. Like, this episode blows things open so wide, and like, I'm not even sure I'm not annoyed with it. Like, I thought the end was cool, and then, you know, who showed up to kind of like, oh, it's like, you know, it's all been part of our plan. And I'm like,
thinking back, okay, does that all track? I can't pinpoint the spot where they came up with that plan, but okay.
But it might be cool. I don't know. Like, I'm not going to like 2 years ago, I would have heaped so much scorn on the end. I'd have been like, man, they had a great episode, and then they fuck it up at this weird curveball at the end. Too clever by half. But, you know, this show might be twice as clever now. So maybe they'll pull it off.
Easily twice as clever. Yeah.
But otherwise, like, yeah, like there was a genuine loss. Like the destruction of Hilltop felt like a momentous thing. I was really, like I said, I was really moved by Earl, the bartender, the blacksmith.
He does that on the side. Yeah. It's his second job.
Not really a false step. I'm very curious to see. And also I keep wondering, like, how much of this actually happened like this in the comics? These wild swings, or how much of it is them actually starting to adapt the material more? What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, I mostly like it too. I was puzzled by the beginning, and I also had the same question about the end that you seem to have. The beginning, though, and I don't want to talk, I guess, too much about it, but I think they've pulled like the Walking Dead boner number one of just like forgetting what's happening midstream. Because as I recall, they left us with a conundrum, right? Like, Our heroes had been wedged between the fiery gates, and they were covered in sap, like super flammable sap that made it so they couldn't really retreat. And then the horde was closing in on them from the other side. And this episode just kind of picks up, and that's not a thing. That's no problem. Like, everything's burning, but no problem for them.
Yeah.
They just forgot what happened. Moments like they couldn't have like stopped shooting for a week and said, you know, guys, everybody go home. I know the fires are burning. They'll still be burning when we get back. You know, we'll just pick up shooting next week. And then they just forgot midstream where they were. And that feels like a classic Walking Dead boner. But it's one weird thing in an episode that is otherwise good. So
if we're going to really start in. Those catapults, weak as fuck.
Yeah, what are they firing? Just like
a cup baseballs, golf balls.
Yeah, Boston Rob's hobby equipment.
Minor rubble, like, you know, gravel. I don't know. Like, they were so unimpressive that like I thought it was telling that they never actually showed any of the quote unquote devastation they were wreaking.
Right, because it would have been disappointing.
It's like they're just like, you can tell that shit's like maybe getting 12 feet range. Like, it's just no.
The hilarious thing about it, though, to me, is that clearly the people at Hilltop had not even conceived of the idea that fire could be used in a battle, because not only did they get caught with their pants down on the burning walls, but they also weren't firing flaming debris at the walkers, which would be great against these super flammable zombies, right?
Right. Yeah. No, they were like, they didn't have any fire brigade. They were completely snug behind their wooden walls.
Right. Their colonial era estate that's made out of mostly kindling. Yeah.
Yeah. Until the blacksmith come around, they just used wooden pegs for nails. Like, it's just wood on wood construction. You know, pine resin, paints. It's just all the worst. Wicker furniture. It's just they're sitting back there smugly, unafraid of these primitive zombie rabbles just coming up with fire. Oh boy.
Yeah.
No, I think you're right. I felt like they did go backwards a little bit in terms of how on fire Hilltop was, but then also is like this magical portal. Like outside the gates was not as bad as we remember, because again, these people are covered in essentially tree sap gasoline.
Right.
So they would just burst into flames. It was on fire. But as soon as they pass through the gate, it's a magical world of fire. Literally everything is full on in blaze. Like the mansion, the new barn, the like temporary housing, all that stuff, everything is just completely engulfed.
Yeah.
It was wild. Yeah. Little continuity.
But what are you going to do? I mean, I'd love, obviously, like, look, we're talking spoilers on this episode, right? So like, I loved the stuff that they did with Negan and Alpha this episode. That was a big high point for me.
Even though it is patently ridiculous to see Negan in a zombie mask.
Oh yeah.
Like, every time he's got the monster mask on, it's high comedy.
He's just like, you know, his Negan hunch and just like rolling around with this baseball bat in his hand.
Mm-hmm. His exasperation at zombies not wanting to be herded. It's all like I posted an image on Twitter, because I know there's a lot of our audience that's like, you know, still hasn't come back to The Walking Dead. There's a lot that's like, yeah, I'm glad we're, and there's some people who are just like listening to the podcast, not watching the show. I kind of like bait images like that, because it's like, we're giving this episode kind of a glowing review, and the cover of it is this gangly scarecrow in a, you know, in a Monster Man mask,
right?
With Lucille again. And if you bailed at like season 7.5, how can you not be fascinated by like what the fuck is going? Yeah. So like I try to like bait the trap and see if I can get Pied Piper some people in here.
Yeah, bring them in.
The thing is, the show is sturdy enough and confident enough at storytelling that it can just lean into those ridiculous concepts and they kind of work.
Sure.
And man, the pacing, last episode was the one we broke. We're like, I give up on Negan. I don't know what the fuck's going on. Yeah. I thought I knew what the plan was. And then they gave us some breadcrumbs early in the episode. I'm like, they don't want us to give up hope. And then he goes full on coup at the end. So I don't, but ask me what the actual plan is, you know, like what him and Carol are trying to achieve. I don't know.
Yeah, it feels like there's some kind of distraction play going on where they were using Hilltop as bait to get to Alpha.
And Lydia, like there's some big wheels moving that seem kind of horrific to contemplate. But
and Lydia definitely doesn't seem in on it. I don't know, man.
Yeah, no.
A lot of questions at the end of this. And I do hope they delve into them next episode. And give us some more information about how this all happened. Probably not in a flashback. I don't want to see like them scheming in the dungeon before Negan escapes, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I got tons more to say, because like I said, I got like there's so many interesting concepts. This whole new pride concept that she came up with right at the end. I wanted to kind of talk about that in terms of Dante. Just tons of different stuff. But I guess we should probably start discussing the episode, huh?
Before we do that, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga-sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, let's get to the recap. We start off with Hilltop burning, lots of fires, lots of walkers, catapults. I don't know. There's a lot of cool stuff going on here. Ezekiel evacuates the kids, can't find Judith. The blacksmith ends up finding her. Earl? Is that his name? I can never remember this guy's name. The radio is burning, and Eugene, I think, goes back in to try and save it.
Yep, he sure does.
Daryl tries to use the shields that they all have to plug the holes in the wall, but it definitely does not work. And they get overrun, and Yumiko sees Magna among the dead, and all hope seems lost. And then we go to the intro.
Yeah, that shot of Carol surveying the absolute destruction around her, just like kind of like just taking off, because, you know, this is a pretty momentous event in Walking Dead history. Like, Hilltop is, other than Alexandria, like our longest location of survivors.
Yeah.
Pretty cool set. Something that they've continued to kind of like build and expand over the years. And it's just gone. Like, it's gone. Like, at the end of this episode, there's, you know, something left, but not, I don't think anything that you can, you essentially start from scratch.
Right. I mean, that the shots they keep showing in this scene of the estate, like the mansion, burning, you're like, well, there's no coming back from this, because that is the main shelter at Hilltop is that building, and it's pretty much gone now.
Yeah, and you know, like the location, I'm sure people can rebuild, but that's exactly what they're going to have to do. And I don't know, why wouldn't you just like rebuild everything at Alexandria?
Right. Yeah, it seems like
consolidate everything. You go with the kingdom's plan, or no, go with the Hilltop's plan of like the outer crops, but the strong inner walls, and then you have the ultimate keep in the form of Reg's cold rolled steel, still standing strong. Can't set that shit on fire, Alpha.
No, you can't.
Like we said last year, Pine Tar can't melt steel beams. I'm calling bullshit. I'm going to be a fucking Alexandra truther if I see that happen. So
it makes me wonder about like the food supply and what season this happened in. Because you know it happens in the wrong season. Like if this happens in summer, like before a harvest or something, you're gonna have a lot of people who just don't have enough food to make it, even if they go to Alexandria.
I was trying to figure that too, because
unless Magnus hoarded like all of like 6 years worth of supplies over that time jump.
Turns out she's squirreled the whole thing. Right. She's taken more than her fair share, perhaps. There's a lot of cool stuff, like you said. I thought everything was cool except for the catapults. These catapults, I was expecting them to be disappointing. Super shitty. The fact that you can't even CGI like one POV shot of a projectile smashing a herd of zombies.
Fire a GoPro off the wall. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty lackluster. I thought the battle itself was pretty cool at night, and there's smoke doing a lot of work, and everything's just burning on orange, hellish, the zombies on fire. I thought was really cool.
I wouldn't call this like hard home territory. It's nothing like that, but it is easily, I think, the biggest scale action piece that The Walking Dead has ever done. And it shows. It's very impressive for this show.
I mean, there's others, like, you know, some of the stuff they did at the tail end of the jail or the governor arc. Terminus was kind of, but I think in terms of size and impressiveness and in genuine kind of like, oh God, I'm concerned for everyone. I do wish to echo your part before when we're talking about in this intro, I do wish one of the Pine Tar people had gone up.
Right.
Like just to establish that like this is a threat, and like, you know, I felt like that was a little cheap, that, you know, like why get them all splashed with that shit if you're not going to set a few of them on fire?
Yeah, it felt like they just forgot midstream what they were doing. But whatever.
Do you think I felt like King Ezekiel came off looking bad this episode. You know, him and Daryl had the bro pact that, like, if one of us go down, and then Ezekiel just kind of, like, jumps the gun on that. Daryl didn't go down. Ezekiel's just like, well, I guess this thing's on fire. It's time to go, kids. And then the way they unfortunately framed them discovering him later in the episode, I kind of debated for a minute whether, like, they were trying to suggest that he was hiding.
Oh.
I don't think that's true, but, like, he just didn't distinguish himself, and I get it, he's got a like cantaloupe in his neck, he's not in full health, but like I felt like they did him dirty. I don't feel like Ezekiel would have just fallen under a piece of tin and laid there all night while the kids were on the line. Sorry, I don't know, I felt like that's unfortunate, but it did give Earl a nice, I don't know, like why don't they give Ezekiel Earl's plot? Like, Ezekiel knows he's going to die.
Yeah. Maybe they just wanted to eliminate the blacksmith. Maybe they're setting us up for something else where they needed Earl to be out of the picture with, like, Adam and Boston Rob and...
Maybe he's a real-life blacksmith, and the blacksmith guild's just got the Walking Dead, the production company, by the balls. Like, you know what a scale blacksmith makes, buddy? You just...
Right. We're making more than Gimple.
Yeah, he's actually his salary. They project if the going rate of all the hazard pay and all the steel working.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be making twice as much as fucking I just ruined the joke as Daryl. Norman Reedus. As Norman Reedus.
Yeah.
Norman Reedus by the end of the season.
That's why Norman's taking on that second spinoff show. Because
he's trying to save the show. Yeah.
Keep up with the Joneses. Earl moved in next door to him. He's got twice as big a house. It's real fucked up.
I think Daryl's Morningstar is, again, stupid, but Norman Reedus is having a lot of fun, like, with a new moveset.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Like, after, like, because he was really twirling and doing, like, it's like, okay, I kind of dig this.
This is him in the RPG where, like, you get the new weapon and you're like, well, it's a couple hit damage points lower, but it's a spear instead of a sword. I want to check it out. Yeah.
Yeah, and once I get level 2 upgrades on it, watch out. The DPS is going to be insane. I like the stacks of bodies, very 300, like the bodies stacking up into a literal wall to plug the gap. I thought that was pretty cool. Probably something straight out of the comics, I imagine.
Some whispers walking with the dead into the gates. I noticed they're fighting some of them too.
Yeah, and that was always like, you know, it's like when the zombie comes out with a machete and starts whirling at you. It's like, oh man. And I thought the survivors handled them very well. Judith is like this little badass, as she's been called before. And she's like slaying zombies, and then she accidentally kills a whisperer. And I think that might be her first human kill, because she felt real different about it,
which
makes a lot of sense. You know, this whisperer suddenly begging her to save or like spare him, and then he dies anyway. I thought that stuff was really cool. Eugene running after the way they filmed this is so hilarious. It's like that poem, "For want of a mullet, the kingdom lost a Rosita. For want of a Rosita, the kid," like on and on, because like that was they were winning. Eugene goes running off the ham radio and it all starts falling to shit. Like that's the narrative story they tell. And I just thought that was really fucking funny.
I mean, he's got a lot of mass, man. If you're trying to block holes in walls, he's the guy you want up front.
That's true. He can block a lot of holes for sure. Rosita she's dressed like a villain from like The Last Airbender, like an evil Fire Nation woman in this episode. I thought that was kind of funny. And then like there's this whole bunch of what the fuck is happening too, like Magna walking with the dead. They don't really explain that either. Is that just a skill that everyone has this late in the game?
If your zombie impression is like good enough, the zombies just don't notice you. It's silly because we've done Guts, right? And now we're doing Whispers, and you need something, some aura of death around you to keep the walkers off you. But she doesn't seem to have any of that. She's just,
in fact, she seems like she's covered with blood, which is like chum for walkers.
Yeah, so, you would think so. I don't know what they were doing with that. That was really weird.
Maybe the zombies only eat things with a brain, and Magna just like does not have two functioning neural cells.
Okay.
So
yeah,
she just goes by on the zombies can detect people's EK or the brain waves, and they're just none.
Yeah, hers were turned off.
All right,
that it.
Yeah,
that's a big
scene.
We
made a meal of that.
It's
big and it's all action. It was cool, and Walking Dead, other than the catapults, didn't besmirch itself. Well done, well done, everyone.
All right, after the battle, Negan's invited to help herd walkers. He's not great at it. He tries a few times and he fails. And instead, he decides he's going to kill a few. And then he sees Lydia limping into the woods and follows her. And he runs across Aaron and he's like, whoa, whoa, don't kill me. Tries to explain a little bit, but Aaron's not having it. Luckily for Negan, walkers close in and Aaron has to protect one of his people that he's dragging to safety. Negan leaves and catches up with Lydia and grabs her.
Yeah. I started wondering when Negan was clearly finishing off the Hilltop Defenders in a way that wouldn't bring them back as zombies, if there wasn't a little civil disobedience going on. And because I was looking for clues, like, Jesus, this guy, you know, but oh, maybe this is actually a mercy. And then Alpha started in on him, and I had no idea that this episode would pretty much clear everything up while also muddying the waters simultaneously. But it's cool. It's cool. Like, then Aaron, of course, is going to see red when he sees Negan wearing a whisper mask. And there's no, like, what's Negan going to say? I did think it was a little bit writerly that, like, the obvious thing for Negan to do would be, like, to kill his side of the walkers and be like,
Yeah.
I know it seems hard, you know, I don't know, just say something like, you know, other than just like, oh, you got six walkers and you're protecting a wounded guy and you only got the one arm, even though it is a steel club, like, eh.
It, probably the calculus going through his head is like, I need to get out of this situation so there's not a deadly confrontation between me and Aaron, and then I will prove myself later, because he knows like what his plan is here. So
right.
I think he's just trying to avoid, he's got to get out of this situation without violence. And that seems like the right. only way is to force Aaron to, you know, deal with these walkers. But yeah, I don't know. There's probably a number of ways he could have gone about it.
Let's say it always feels like, and I feel like The Walking Dead has been good about this in the last two seasons. Like, there's always a way to do the same thing you're doing, only having the communication being open, you know, like, mm-hmm. like you're not just using silences and awkward pauses and if you just give me a second to explain, you know, yeah. and to like, just repeat that dialogue for 5 minutes, like just start explaining, motherfucker. You've had, you know, like, I don't know. It's always a little tropey, but, if it's the worst sin the show commits, then it's doing all right.
It makes me wonder what's going to happen, because now that Hilltop's gone, everybody's going to be flocking to Alexandria, right? That's the natural place for all the people who survived to go.
What their stated goal is, like, that's where they're trying to get to, yeah.
What are they going to do when they show up and it's like, oh yeah, Hilltop's gone, we got overwhelmed by Alpha and the Walkers.
And they're right behind
us. And Alexandria is like, this is the first we're hearing of it. Why? Why is
Rosita
this?
Rosita just talked to Gabriel. She said right? everything was cool, man.
Not 2 hours ago, we were on the horn with you guys, and you didn't say word one of this. Yeah, there's going to be some hell to pay, I hope, when they get to Alexandria.
Because that's the thing. Like, that was an unforced error, because they had all the parts there where, like, we know that they need the relay. Although, now with Eugene blasting coast to coast, I don't even think that's true.
Yeah, probably not.
But they could have. It's so weird because they told the visual story of the Negan helping the Whispers take out the communications relays. So then, like, there was a perfect, you know, but then you have Rosita saying, oh, yeah, I talked to the Gabriel and he's like, everything's cool. No, I couldn't possibly tell him about why would I want to distract him with his vital military intelligence?
Yeah.
Like, it's so, I don't know. I almost hope we miss something. Like,
I hope
it's so dumb that I kind of feel like we got it a little bit confused.
But this is The Walking Dead. I would not put any amount of dumbness past them.
This is true.
Even with Kang at the wheel, like, we still have writers in the room, I'm sure, who worked under Gimple.
Yeah, and it's not exactly perfect, and they don't have unlimited finances and whatnot. I will say that Negan trying to herd zombies was very entertaining to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just his whole, like, you can tell there's a, you know, like, he does the slow pass and waits to see if the zombie reacts, and he does three of these passes with increased exasperation, and like, does. This zombie's too dumb, you know?
He's got to talk to it, right? He's got to be like, walk with us.
right. Got to be the zombie whisperer.
Yeah.
The zombie whisperer.
I was surprised at the autonomy that Negan had this episode. They're just like letting him totally off the leash at this point. And I get it.
Start boning Alpha.
Yeah, Alpha's all about, like, I'm going to make you my lioness, all that stuff. And so he's got, like, some measure of freedom. I was just surprised how quickly it came, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think he kind of wrapped Alpha around his little finger. And she saw the danger, but, like, also couldn't do what was really necessary. Like, what was really necessary is, like, as soon as she saw that Negan was essentially, you know, usurping her power, which started happening like 2 episodes ago, she had to kill him. That's the only way.
Mm-hmm.
And she, this episode, tries to, like, send him away. Like, that's going to work. I don't know. It's really interesting showing, like, how ultimately weak Alpha was in the end.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to Kelly, Gamma, and Boston Rob walking somewhere, probably to Alexandria, like we said. Gamma wants to help quiet Rob's crying baby. He initially refuses, but eventually relents in order to shut the stupid baby up. They take a break, and Gamma's, you know, got Adam now. And she tells them about her sister and how much she regrets her death. And they hear walkers closing in, and so they move. Everybody takes shelter in a family van, and except for Gamma, who leads the walkers away, and she kills him. But then she's gutted like a fish by Beta, but not before tearing his mask. And then some other skin freak recognize him, so he kills him. And then Gamma comes back as a walker. Boston Rob takes her out and runs the Beta off. Holy shit, that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, another big action scene. Did you think Boston Rob gave up the baby a little too easy?
Yeah, but I get it. Like, you can't have a crying baby in the apocalypse, right? We always talk about how dangerous.
That's true.
And you know, potentially lethal that is. So
that's true.
It makes a certain amount of sense.
And the way the structure of this episode and the season worked, like, they didn't have time, but I felt like that caused that character to go through a pretty emotional hairpin turn. But you're right. Yeah. Like, the threat of a baby screaming in the wilderness and the Walking Dead scenario is pretty extreme. So.
Especially right after this battle, because you got to imagine there are a lot of walkers still in the area, right?
Right, right. Man, I actually thought that Thora Birch had main cast potential.
I know.
Yeah, I was actually when they stabbed her, I'm like, and he's like, oh, you'll walk. Oh, Boston Rob's going to get there and save her. And then when he like takes that and like goes from navel to sternum, I'm like, oh, no,
that's it. Nope.
Not all the Sadiqs with all the antibiotics in the world's going to fix this. You are going. I'm like, oh, God. And I was like getting pissed like this isn't because, you know, this is a pretty valiant last stand, you know, to try to protect your nephew. And then for this asshole, like I got a little something against cults, and like a cult that can like literally co-opt you in death.
Yeah.
Like I was just like, God, this is a bad deal, man. And thank God for Boston Rob. Almost earned me memorizing his name. Nope. Couple more Alderaan and it's almost there. I've got the basic shape. Distinguish yourself a time or two more and I'll get you. I'll get you, Boston Rob.
For sure. So yeah, it's a good thing Earl dies this episode because he would be so pissed that Boston Rob let Gamma hold the baby.
Got her whisper fingers all over his Adam.
Oh, he'd smell it for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, it's like handling a baby bird out of the nest. The blacksmith will never take it back now.
No way.
So they've got a wheel within a wheel going here. One of the whisper dumb fucks stumbles upon Beta and be like, it's you. I thought I recognized your. Well, what's what's Beta up to?
I don't know, man. And he like says, you know, he does the shh thing. So. Yeah, there's something going on here that we're not privy to.
I think he's on a super secret mission to like cement his status as Beta because he's like very threatened to Negan. He's very threatened by Negan and he's like doing things that he thinks are in the greater good of the pack, but are also like involving killing random ones, random pack members. So I don't know. I'm curious because there are like no less than three conspiracies operating within these groups. Like Alexandria's got one. Carol's running a black ops with Negan. Beta's got his own shenanigans he's playing. Like, what? It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I'm trying to think how that could matter to us as an audience, right? Like, okay, it's significant to this dude who he actually is under the mask, and we've never seen him. Well, we have kind of seen him without the mask, right? Like,
yeah, in that flashback episode.
Right, right. So, I don't know why this would be significant to the audience, but hopefully they...
It just lets us know that Beta's doing something shady. I don't know.
And that he's like, recognizable to people,
that he's
right?
But he's doing something. Like, he's like, you know, something's happening that somebody is it's a mystery, but this guy's put it together. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. But it's also compounded by the fact that Alpha routinely sends her people on these mysterious missions at cross purposes to each other. So, like,
sure.
Who the fuck knows? It's interesting, though.
I always
find it entertaining when a really good actor gets a chance to be a zombie.
Yeah.
Because I always feel like they bring a little bit more, like they really juice it. They think about like, oh, what would a zombie think when it's first waking up? And like, I felt like Thora Birch acted the hell out of her becoming a zombie.
Yeah, man. I'm telling you, Thora Birch, too good for this show. That's why they had to kill her.
Clearly.
She was threatening Earl's pay scale, and he was not having it.
She had the Air Force put a too good for this show clause in her contract, which Jesus could only be like six episodes. Yeah.
Yep. Her pay goes up exponentially in every episode she's in.
Oh, yeah. They got another fucking blacksmith standoff. AMC lawyers, they really fall for those.
All right, let's move to Eugene desperately trying to piece together his radio. It's a lost cause. Carol sees Magna explaining to Yumiko how she got out and how she lost Connie and the Horde. Yumiko tries to make Carol apologize for the shit she put everyone through and ends up punching her. And Magna breaks up with Yumiko, but it seems pretty mutual.
Yeah. I thought Carol had pretty big Sarah Connor energy here. You know, when like Yumiko's like angrily accusing her stuff and she starts with the you ever know what it's like to feel a life grow within you? No, you can't. All you know how, and except for this time she got punched in the face. I thought that was also cool. Like it doesn't really phase her. She's kind of like mildly surprised and she kind of walks off. Mm-hmm. Is Connie dead? There's a bunch of questions here.
Yeah. Is Connie dead? Maybe not. I don't know. This show, like, she found a key card and just wandered off into the woods.
It says PPP.
Right.
It leads to a better series. do you think that, because I just don't think they can possibly kill her with her importance to Daryl now off screen. Stumble in as a zombie at this rate, like the minimum they owe her is a single episode flashback that explains how she got in that situation. But I just don't think they're going to do it.
What they are probably going to do is have some tension between Carol and Daryl, because as Magna rightfully points out and Yumiko rightfully points out, this is all Carol's fault. And we've been waiting for somebody to let her know that. Right.
And Daryl was pretty fucking frustrated. He's pretty fucking frustrated with her too. So like he doesn't need that much encouragement to boil over. It doesn't seem like the other thing that's a little I'm vague on.
Especially after right after he says I could never hate you, and then she gets Connie killed. I don't know. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the status of the Horde, the Herd?
Well, Alpha says they need to regroup. There's probably a lot of dead walkers.
But I'm talking about the cave-in, because Magna and them said that there was like tons of sickos dead or crushed, but then they also described what they wound up into as the Horde.
Yeah.
So
And then they sent that at Hilltop. And a lot more died.
A bunch of them died. So I'm wondering if we're like, that's the thing that like kind of annoyed me in late goings of Game of Thrones, is like there's all these big battles, but everyone still had 20,000 troops left, you know, like no matter what, was always 20,000. It seemed like there was always 20,000 dudes versus 20,000 dudes. It's like, so what the hell are we winning? We're losing. And I feel like I need a no shit head count on zombies to kind of keep the score going. And I don't know how they're going to do that, because there's a little intentionally so a fog of war effect, maybe Negan taking command or having a schism in the Whispers will. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it really depends on how much more they're doing with the Whispers, because Alpha is dead, obviously. So does it even matter how many Walkers are out there anymore? Is the Horde a threat anymore now that the head's been cut off of it, literally?
That's what I think. I feel like Beta, like, I think long-term this cult is done for, because it needed a singular, but like, can this thing, you know, like, what can you do with the 10,000 herd of zombies that you can't do with a 5,000 strong herd of zombies?
Yeah.
Probably not much, and like, there's not much difference in the combat capability when you're talking about assaulting a town the size of Hilltop, Alexandria, Oceanside. So like, also I could see Beta successfully waging like a pointless war and getting everyone killed, and then the cult falls apart, but who cares, because everyone's dead. So I like this decapitating Alpha. I never thought it was like the master stroke that Carol thinks it is, you know, not when it's immediate survival's on the table.
Yeah, I think you're right, long term it is, but short term, they're still gonna have to deal with the consequences of that.
Yeah. It'd be one thing if it's like a situation where like the military leadership below her was all like, we should sue for peace. And she's the one that's kind of keeping them all together. And if you just like cooler heads with, but like all the heads below her are fucking crazy too. Like Beta, no way. Gamma's already on the out. So,
well, she's, she's totally done.
Yeah. Anyway, I kind of hope they give us an update on some of those things so I can really track how the battle's going.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, they talk in this episode about, we gotta regroup, we gotta regather and replenish our numbers. How do they do that? Because, like, once you scoop up a shitload of walkers from the area, you gotta wait probably a long time for them to just wander back in.
I mean, she's talking in context of the Hilltop survivors, but, like, there's not gonna be a lot of them.
Yeah, you know? Right.
If there's 100 people at Hilltop, I wouldn't think you'd get more than a handful of zombies because they're probably all going to die or they're going to escape or their compatriots would put them out of their misery before they had to get run off. So
I don't know. We'll see. Carol is grabbed at by a walker while she's kind of just sitting there. Eventually she kills it. She asks Eugene if he's ever going to ever gone after something with everything he's got and ended up with nothing to show for it. So he tells her about his love life. Carol advises that he shirk his responsibilities and just go meet with Blue Weevil. And then Carol finds, I think, Lydia's walking stick or sword in the leaves. I can't really tell.
I thought it was maybe Judith's. But you're right. It's probably Lydia's.
It's
probably Lydia's
big.
The way. Yeah. 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 You're right. You're right. And she does have a very similar. Okay. Yeah. No, because I thought I had in my notes Judith. Surely not Michonne.
No. No. She has her sword and she's on the ocean.
But I forgot that she has that kind of like really samurai looking sword sheath as a combat stick.
I guess so. I don't recall seeing it in the past, which is why I was confused, but. I guess
she's busted it out. And then, of course, Negan grabbed her. So that's why she drained. Yeah, that makes sense. I do like this pathetic zombie attempt to eat Carol.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way she treats it is like a nuisance. Like just not now. Come on. Would you stop fucking, you know, like he's drunkenly hitting on her at a Christmas party. It's just really funny.
It has like some symbolism too. Like the dead are never going to stop. Right. It's like. You can't just, you know, ignore the threat of the dead because they'll keep coming. They don't sleep. They don't, they can't be like taught to behave themselves. They're just going to come eat you if they can. So, yeah, I don't know. And then Eugene, man. I guess, what are the odds that Eugene is leaving the survivors camps here to go meet up?
I think
with
pretty
Blue
high.
Weevil. Think so?
I think pretty high. I think he's this is, if nothing else, going to propel the plot.
Yeah.
Like meeting this other thing. So like I think it's pretty, and also like, yeah, man, I don't know that the services of Mr. Wizard are going to be used in the next couple days, you know, like I don't know that, like, you know, for want of a mullet, although I don't know. They just said that like if he had held the ranks, you know, Hilltop might still be standing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I did like this is the first time in a long time I have to look up one of his words. Brobdignagian.
Yeah.
So like everyone knows Gulliver's travels, how he went to the, like, was it the Lilliputians, the mm-hmm. little people?
Yeah.
Apparently he went to this other land called Brobdingnag, where it's a land of giants and he was a little person. So like if it's of Brobdingnagian proportions, it's immense, colossal. Okay. Like his meeting, for example.
Yeah. And like Carol. Yeah, we get it, dude. We get it. Big. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
All right, let's move on to Daryl, Jerry, his wife, and Rosita, and a bunch of others head toward the rendezvous to hopefully meet up with Ezekiel, but he is not there.
Yeah, Nabila seems like she's hurt pretty bad. Like she's got burned on significant parts of her body. I'm a little worried.
Yeah, she's talking about how it's getting worse and it's not a good sign.
I feel like, you know, like this death shroud has been hovering over Jerry ever since the narrow escape in the mine. And maybe it's hanging over his whole family. I'm nervous. Don't want the big man. Don't wish him any grief at all.
He gets his kids back by the end of this, right?
Yeah, the kids all come back.
They're all
sure.
with Earl. OK.
Yeah, they're all with they're all with Judith to be
at that
technically.
Point.
But I like how, you know, Daryl's like confident the King Ezekiel would get him out. Mm-hmm. And then like 3 seconds later, oh, he didn't. Shit, we're going to have to find him.
Right. So speaking of Earl, he's got all the kids. Judith is asking him about Ezekiel and the rest of the kids want to know when they'll be reunited with their parents. So Earl goes into the next room to kill himself.
Which, to make a suicide. Right. Where did he see the example for this? Was it the Salem witch trials? Like the Spanish Inquisition? Like where did
this
one
straight
for this?
from the Earl machine, the Earl box?
It's an OG suicide bench. All
this
right.
is the one thing All he's right. able to cook up himself.
Yeah, I think I see how this the parts of this machine assemble. Yeah.
It must be his own invention because it fails. Anyway, he's interrupted by Judith.
It's just as effective as his fucking catapults. Yeah.
Right.
Oh my God. Savagery.
So Judith interrupts him. She wants to be, I guess, in the room when it happens. I don't know. And he tells her to keep the kids safe and then sends her away. And They real quick cut back over to Ezekiel and then cut back to this, but we'll get there.
But can we stop here for a minute?
Yeah.
Because her name's Kaylee Fleming is little Judith here.
Okay.
And am I crazy? Because like I'm in the tank for this little girl because she reminds me so much of my niece, Lorelai. Like it's fucking incredible. So like she's just is like tearing my heart out. Like I thought the blacksmith who I thought's been okay. I thought this was a really good scene for him. And yeah. really tugged on the heartstrings. And I just fucking love Judith so much, man.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, like, oh, if they ever ask her to cry, what's that going to be like? Man, she fucking nailed it.
Yeah.
Oof. I don't like seeing Judith cry.
Yeah. I mean, that's not a thing you want to see happen, but.
I got choked up when she's like, I don't want you to be alone. He's like, I'm not going to be alone, honey. I got Tammy and my son waiting for him. I was like, oh, God damn. Fucking Earl throwing 99 mile an hour speed balls here.
Yeah.
Speed pitches. Fastballs. Yeah. There you go.
So then this next scene is where Jerry and Daryl find Ezekiel buried under a piece of the wall.
Hiding.
He immediately just pops up and runs off toward where Earl has the kids.
Mm-hmm. As soon as he's been rescued, he's like suddenly no longer struggling to get out from underneath that piece of corrugated aluminum or whatever.
Right.
Weighs all of 5 pounds, just pushing him down. What's he supposed to do, Jim? Get up from underneath that, given 12 hours?
Yeah, I mean, man, he really adhered to bald move rule number one, which I think is just play dead. Yeah, that might not... Never talk to the cops might be number one. I don't remember.
I think that's rule number one. That's true. We might need a subsection of that rule. Like, unless you're responsible for, like, I don't know, 24 children. Maybe you take a risk with your life.
You talk to the cops or you don't play dead?
If you're don't play dead.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So. You're probably right about that. Oh, Zeke, what are you doing, man?
They did him dirty. Like, I don't know why. Yeah. I don't know why they had to have this thing where, like, because, like, it'd be one thing if he, like, got split up and, you know, he's like, oh, I thought they were with you, Daryl, because, you know, but, like, it's just, I don't know, man. I was kind of let down by poor little King Ezekiel here.
Yeah, maybe like Jerry too. The smoke chokes him. Like, they talk about all the smoke and you can't see.
That's
and so
true.
Like, you know, maybe he's got.
Plus, again, the man has an enormous tumor in his neck. Like, who knows what that's doing? Constricting his breath, his blood supply. Who knows? Who knows?
Probably could have done better, but whatever. So Earl kills himself on a railroad tie. Kind of. Judith goes in to check out his body and finds that he's not totally dead. He's a walker now, and Earl grabs at her as Daryl, Jerry, and Zeke make their way into the house. All the kids run out to him except for Judith, and Daryl goes inside and finds Earl's dead body on the floor with Judith sitting next to it. Then Daryl sits down with her.
I will say that it is a very nice moment, and I very strong suspect that scene where Daryl opens a door and like his shadow falls on like little Judith against the wall, looking very small, kind of curled up in a ball. Man, really rhymed the shit out of that one.
Yeah.
That's got to be a frame out of the comic books, right?
Because
looked very much like that kind of framing. And it's one of those things where, like, I'm starting to, like, God, I wish I'd read the books because that looked pretty fucking iconic. Even without that, that was just a great scene. Like, Daryl coming in, putting his arm around her, pulling her close. Like, again, I'm a softie when it comes to kids, but this was, like, really, really hitting me. Got me really choked up.
Yeah.
And also, Earl, yeah, you made a bad suicide machine. You've done a couple of questionable decisions here by my rights. But you know what? It takes a real, real man to fucking try to impale one's head on a railroad spike to protect children.
Yeah.
And even though you failed, like the fact that you made the attempt, man, hats off to you. Hats off to you.
Yeah, that's heroism of a certain type. Sure.
Yeah, like I was just thinking, like, you know, and I felt like the actor did a really good job of portraying, because that's the thing, it's like, when were you aware of the fact that Earl was a goner?
Oh, like immediately, as soon as they showed him, because he's acting so frail and they modeled his skin and
they got the black veins of zombiehood all over his face. And yeah. So I thought they, but like,
lessen the impact of it, though. Like, they didn't need to surprise me with that fact, right? It still worked.
Right.
I saw it, and I was immediately like, oh, shit. Oh, shit, these kids are in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. When Judith went in there, I'd kind of decided, like, you know, I kind of hope Earl succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would, you know, be cool for Earl, and also it would be cool for Judith. But it didn't happen, but he tried. And it's a tough scene.
It's rough because Judith in one day has to both kill her first living human, I think, and also kill the friend who's turned walker. It's a tough day for
man. She's grown up like very much like Carl, like growing up quick after.
And I feel like that's everything Daryl's saying. By sitting down next to her, he's like, I get it. These are the experiences that we now share, right? Because he's been through all that too. Everyone who's alive has been through that at this point.
And I like that how she's kind of sneaking in there, kind of hoping that she wouldn't have to. And then the zombie grabbed her, and she didn't have her, but she had her knife ready because, you know, Rickham has shown raised no fools.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell. I don't know. I got to see RJ, how he handles himself. But like Judith, no fools detected.
Nope.
She's quick with that knife. So pretty cool.
All right. Then we go back over to Negan, who takes Alpha. Yeah, tells her, hey, I got that thing you wanted and you've been looking for. Takes her out to a place where Alpha assumes that Lydia is tied up. As we also see intercut, Lydia struggling to get free inside the shack. And on the way, Alpha tells Negan that she wants him to become a disciple. And he tells Alpha about his cancerous wife and tries to convince Alpha that she doesn't have to kill Lydia. Negan like also lays on a little bit of romance charm here. I don't know, just long enough to buy Lydia time to break out. But it turns out that Negan tricked her. And when she realizes it, he slashes her throat.
So on second watch, why does Negan take the time to do this much chin wagging with Alpha?
No.
Was there anything she could have said that he would have like done something different?
There must be. And I'm just not catching like what the out here is for her.
Or is this the satisfaction of like laying to bear your foe's weaknesses right before you're going to kill him? Just like, you know, like being able to have the last word, kind of like, you know, you think this, you think that, but it's actually, because I thought he was almost telegraphing what was happening too much.
Yeah.
Like I was thinking that like if Alpha had one iota less smitten with Negan, and that's what it felt like, that she just completely dropped her guard because she was infatuated with Negan. That she would have killed him. Like, and in fact,
and there's a line earlier in the episode where she's like, I don't have everything I want, so it wasn't a victory. And this is her moment to get that. So she's blinded by that too, the full victory.
Right. Yeah. But she also, there's also this statement she makes in the beginning of the scene where, you know, he's talking about seeing the zombies' beauty, and he's like, it just looks like bag of bones and bad teeth to me. And she's like, well, you'll see their beauty soon. It makes me wonder if one of those wheels that's also turning wasn't supposed to crush Negan.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, I wonder if the plan was, I want you to go out and be a lion, start your own pride, and, you know, then just sending him out alone for Beta to kill after he served his use.
Maybe
it wouldn't surprise me if she was like a step or two ahead of him, but still a step or two behind the combined Negan and Carol team.
Yeah, like maybe he let her think she was a step ahead in order to lull her into a false insecurity and get her with this.
Yeah.
There's definitely, you know, a plan going on here, like you said, with Carol that I didn't know about, and I don't think any of us knew about or could have seen.
No way. Yeah. And in general, I don't like that. I remember, like I often admired Breaking Bad because they showed the plans and like they played always with the cards face up. And I think I remember there's one time where they didn't, where like Walt did some grand strategy without us in the know. And I remember that that kind of annoyed me. And yeah, in general, I like it when shows kind of like, you know, in retrospect, it should have been obvious from the beginning, but this literally came out of nowhere.
Right.
You know, I mean, if there were hints to it, they were pretty fucking subtle. Maybe that's the thing. It's like, if, you know, we were reading with Reddit every week, they would have been like, well, obviously, you know, Carol's got her fingers crossed in this scene and she's scratching her ear here and she's tapping Negan and Morse code with in this scene. But
yeah. And if, you know, Walking Dead didn't have at least like a 4-season run of complete bullshit behind it, I would have taken a lot of this more seriously and maybe followed more closely too, and maybe seen this coming. But I don't know. You know, we're talking about it right now, so let's get to that final scene where Negan takes Alpha's zombified head back to Carol and tosses it at her feet, and she responds with, well, it took you long enough.
Yeah, I thought I thought that he was going to, the reason he slit her throat is because he's going to lead her back to the pack and be like, I am the alpha now.
Yeah.
But that clearly didn't happen. So, I mean, I guess he can still put her head in the sack and do the same thing, but I think it'd be more powerful if she was like, the symbolism of her literally following him in death would have been something else. And then he'd have to, if he puts down Beta, then he essentially takes charge of the herd and he can run them off a cliff or whatever the hell he wants to do with them, I suppose.
Sure.
I wonder what you would do if you successfully took control of the Whisperers and you wanted to save the town. What the fuck would you do? I guess there's enough in there that's kind of wanting out that maybe you could get away with that, but there's also a lot of true believers that would, you know, turn against you. I don't know. I guess it'd be really fucked up as if you just, like, in the middle of a herd just started outing everybody as human. And so the zombies just turn on, you know, the guardians turn on the Whisperers and it's just all done.
Yeah, he could send them on doomed missions like, oh, I need you to go to the gates of Alexandria and wave a flag that says suck it for 25 minutes or something.
You don't understand, but that's fine. It's all part of the plan. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There are ways. If you control people, there are ways to get them to do what you want.
What if the human survivors in Alexandria take those long range wrist rockets and they like get like vials of like blood and human sweat and other scent and they get up and, you know, they start launch like pinpointing the Whisperers so they can bomb them with human scent. Chum them.
I like it.
Long range chumming. Just big bladders, like launch them with those big long water balloon
human
launchers.
Blood bladders.
Yeah, fill a bladder. Not like human bladder, just any old bladder. A bladder in the term of a sack, Jim.
Not human bladders.
He's got
sicko. Full of human blood.
You don't have to use human bladders, my God. Who said that? Jesus, calm down.
No. No one said that, but I can imagine just like the giant water balloon of human blood splattering over a horde of walkers. It's pretty horrifying.
It would send them into a friend. Yeah, do something for sure.
They turn on each other.
Yeah. We also, this last scene gave us a lot of like Negan development, a surprising amount, like adding dimension to like, you know, his wife dying before the apocalypse, putting him in this kind of like disassociative state and then the apocalypse happening to him and, you know, one thing leading to another. I thought that seemed prime for me wanting to know more.
Yeah, it seems like. You know, we lost Thor Birch, but we are going to keep Negan around, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, seemingly. So this final season, I assume we're going to get some more of his integration back into the Alexandrians.
Although it would be pretty sick if he did like almost a Tale of Two Cities style where like, well, I guess it wouldn't be quite that. But like, what if he dies and ultimately we know as the audience that he's responsible for saving the survivors because of this long term double spy? But the Alexandrians and everyone, he's in infamy because he double fucked them. Like that would kind of be.
And Carol just lets that be the way it is,
because it's like the truth that it's like some kind of bullshit Dark Knight shit, you know, that Negan's the hero we don't deserve. I think that would be very Walking Dead appropriate and also would like really set Carol up to be a fucking monster.
Yeah, that could be cool. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah,
because Aaron's gonna have some questions up. Right, like
true. Oh, that's what I'm saying now? Like if Negan dies today and the Whisperers all fall apart, like he will always be branded as a Whisperer. And I think that's kind of neat. The fact that like there's a very different opinion about a character that the audience has versus like everyone in universe. That would be kind of an interesting tension for a show to fuck around with for a long season, for example.
That's the thing. Like they've done a hell of a job rehabilitating Negan in the audience's eyes, or at least in my eyes, because I'm, you know, actively rooting for him at this point. And if you asked me in season 8 if that would have been true, I would have said absolutely not.
Yeah, and it's like a unique, it's funny because shows like this and like Game of Thrones too are kind of uniquely allow us to kind of like experiment with these types of moralities, because like who's to say what you would do if your love of your life died of cancer, and then the next week the dead walked the earth, and all of things in good society just were swept away, and it was just primal and savage, and like, would you still maintain your whatever code, or would you kind of lose yourself, and would you, like, I mean, you know, there's a little bit more room to color outside the lines, and like, because whereas like a person does that today, like if you lose your wife and you just go and fucking, you know, take a rifle and kill 30 people at a mall, like you're just an asshole. Yeah. You know, we got therapists and shit, you know, like, you know, maybe there's not as much access as we'd like, but like, you know, you don't have to do that. There's still evidence of good, you know, like, but like the zombie apocalypse, like, yeah.
Yeah. If you're fighting for survival on top of that loss, yeah. Could drive you to do all kinds of things.
Yeah. I think that's something that, like, to get meta, like Marvel's struggling with in some of their TV series, is the idea, like, in feudal societies and like post-apocalyptic societies, there's a lot more room for anti-heroes and for redemption and for like doing fucked up things, and then like people forget. Like, but in, when anything's set in like a modern day, like, nah, you can't just kind of like fucking mind control a town and get away with it, or like, you know, beat someone to death with, say, a high profile symbolic shield and be forgiven. And like, I don't know that they know that, but that's talk for another franchise.
Yeah.
What was that? It? Are we drawing things to a close?
That's it. I'm curious to see what they do with this plan with Carol, if they do anything with it. And how they rehabilitate Negan or reintegrate him, or if they can, if he dies, whatever. Yeah, I'm excited for the next four episodes of the season.
Same. So that's going to be it for our coverage of The Walking Dead this week. I will say parenthetically, stick around if you're on stereo or Twitch, because we're going to do a feedback. We got at least one here in the queue.
One feedback does not a show make.
Yeah, we might just, this might just be an addendum, might just be just something we shove on the end of this podcast, but we'll see. Or we, you know, maybe we'll have several more. It'll catch fire like so many pine sap soaked zombies. That's going to do it for our coverage for The Walking Dead this week. Of course, we'll be back next week. We're almost done with this season, and then we'll have the bonus episodes, and then we'll have a little bit of like a couple weeks off, and then it'll be back to live Walking Dead. Holy shit. I can't wait for that. But we'll be back next week. Of course, if you'd like to leave us long form feedback, just send it into watchingdead@baldmove.com, and we'll get to that at the end of the season. And as always, if you got something you want to say currently in your own voice, you can listen to our live recordings every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. On stereo.com/baldmove, where we take people's voicemails and recordings live. That's what we do. We're Watching Dead at baldmove.com, and we'll get to it in a few weeks. Thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.